Parsha Shmos, when Moshe reprimands the man who was fighting and lifted his hand against his friend, the man responded to Moshe, "Mi samcha le'ish zarva shofet aleinu, hal hargeni at omer kasha harakta es ha-mitzri." Vayira Moshe ma'od vayomar achena da davar. The person noted that he knew that Moshe had executed the Mitzri, and Moshe was greatly scared. Vayira Moshe. Rashi says, Vayira Moshe, what was he scared of? Kipshuto, umedrasho, doag lo al sharob Yisrael rishayim delaturin. He saw that there was among Israel, there were villains and there were informers. Amar me'ata shemeinam ruin ligoil. Now that I see that they have such people, perhaps they are not worthy of being redeemed. And the next Rashi also says, Achein odah ha'davar, Rashi says, No deli ha'davar sh'isi tam alav. The Medrash is, again, k'mashmo, but the Medrash is, now I know what I was wondering about. Ma'chotu Yisrael mikol ayin umos lios nirdim avodas perach. How has Israel sinned more than the other 70 nations that they deserve to be oppressed with such backbreaking work? Avarani shem ruim l'chein. Because of this sin of Mesira, Moshe said, now I understand that they deserve to go through Golas Mitzrayim. A similar idea is found in the Ralbag. One of his Toalios, the lessons that we learn from the story, is Lahodia Roa Minhag Yisrael Be'ez Hahu. We see the bad quality of the Jewish character at this time. That they were fighting, he says, and that they were when Moshe gave them Musar, they wouldn't listen, and they threatened to inform on him, and this explains why the Jews suffered in Golus. So the Torah is emphasizing the terrible avera of Mesira, of informing on people to the government and thereby bring down the wrath of the government. Moshe had to run for his life. Now, Mesira is a very fraught topic. There's a great deal of misunderstanding and smoke and noise about it. People err on two opposite sides. People err on two opposite sides of their approach toward Mesira. On the one hand, there are fundamentalists who say that Mesira is absolutely forbidden under all circumstances, no matter what. No one can ever go to the government to report anything, and anyone who does is a Rasha and an Eisvarf and should be excommunicated and has done the most terrible thing in the world. On the other hand, there are people who say that render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, we should follow the laws of the land, the government is just, and the government has a system of laws, criminal laws and civil laws, and the Torah is very nice in its own sphere, but we should always follow secular law. Neither of these two approaches, while both of them certainly have merit, neither of them is entirely correct. It is true, certainly, that Chazal and the Poskim, the Rishonim, the Acharonim, do treat Mesira as a terrible, terrible avera. There are problems with the Moser Shchita, possibly, and any get that he writes, and a Sefer Torah that he writes, and a Moser it says his Yared Ligehenim, and Nidon Ledare Doros, and it's worse than a Meshumad, and of course when a Moser can be killed under certain circumstances to prevent him from being Moser if he's been properly warned and the Mesira is serious enough. But it is nevertheless not true that Mesira is always Usur and that we can never report people to the government. There are actually three intertwined issues with Mesira. There is the Mesira that we just spoke of, the terrible Avera for which a person goes to Gehenna, which the Mefarshim explain the severity is due to the fact that our enemies, you know, will not stop at simply taking his money, but may end up torturing him and killing him, and it's a form of Rodif. A Mesira is considered a form of Rodif, putting the life of the victim in danger. There's also often the question of our kos, of Aveinu Plilim, of trying cases between Jews in a non-Jewish court, which is considered a Chil Hashem, and being Meirim Yad B'Taras Moshe, raising a hand against Taras Moshe by rejecting it in favor of an alternate system and creating a great Chil Hashem. And in a more mundane sense, Mesira is simply a tort. It's simply a form of Hezek. A Moser can cause damage to the victim. Now, it's important, whenever we discuss Mesira, to understand which issue we're considering. Are we considering ab initio, l'chatchila, whether Mesira is mutter, or techil Hashem, or in danger? Are we considering b'di'eved, whether we should have liability for tashlumen? But in general, in all three of these things, in terms of the isser of our kos, in terms of the redifa, putting the person's life in danger, we do find In American jurisprudence, there is an expression: the Constitution is not a suicide pact. That even though we revere the Constitution and it's the ultimate and highest law of the land, there is a sense that we cannot be forced to destroy ourselves because of the basic principles, as just and as important as they are in the Constitution. Similarly, in halacha, while the poskim don't use quite the same language, it is a fairly well-established principle that the laws of Mesira and Arkos do not prevent someone from getting justice. If there is no other solution outside of Mesira and Arkos, the poskim generally do find ways to permit somebody to go to Arkos. In fact, the classic heter Arkos to begin with, it's actually quite interesting. There's no clear Gemara and no clear sugya that permits people to go to Arkos in the case where the litigant refuses to listen to Din Torah. One of the main sources is actually an obscure Agadata Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara says, "Minaha milsa d'amri inshi karis l'chavruch v'lo anyach rami guda v'shadi ale." If you have called your friend and he has not responded, throw a wall and pile it on top of him. "Tchsev yan tihartech v'lo tiharta." Because Hashem says, "I have purified you, but you have not become purified. Lo tatari od." So I give up on you. You'll never become tar. So the Rosh in Bava Kamma. This Gemara does not occur in the context of halacha or mesira or anything. It's simply one item in a long list of minoha milsa d'amri inshi, finding sources and meaning behind common folk expressions in Talmudic times. But the Rosh cites a gaonic interpretation, mikan pasek rav paltavi gun, rav paltavi sal, if Reuven has a claim against Shimon, umisarev lavo imuladin, Shimon will not cooperate with Beis Din, shrashoi lavi larko shel nachrum te lahotzi shalom mitachas yado. Meaning, if you have called your friend, meaning called him to a din Torah, and he has not come, then pile on top of him, take him to court. And indeed, there are poskim who say that this means that you can take him to court even if he will suffer penalties above and beyond your actual claim. Rav Shmuel Kili in the Mishpatei Shmuel says that afal gav devadei biyos lufnei arkos shel goyim yachbidu alav ha'ol, they will put a heavy yoke upon him. V'ulay yavu l'tzara gedola. He may even end up in a great tzara. Mekalchan yesh hatar b'davar. Acharei dezeh pasha b'tchila. So in terms of the Mesira, in terms of the Arkos, even though it's a great chil Hashem, and even though Mesira is considered redifa, nevertheless, if it is his fault and there's no other solution, generally there will be some way of enforcing a person's rights in court. So I have never really found a completely satisfactory explanation for why, let's say, the Chil Hashem of Arkos is permitted because of the problem that you can't get your money any other way. Since when is it mutter to mechal Shem Shemayim in a terrible way just because you have a financial claim that will otherwise remain unsatisfied? Nevertheless, this is a well-established halacha that Mesira and Arkos do have exceptions for cases where a person has a legitimate claim that cannot be satisfied without involving the secular courts and the temporal authorities. On the other hand, the position that we live in a just, under a just government and a just state, and therefore we should act fully as American citizens and avail ourselves of the full range of legal and judicial remedies, is also not really correct. While of course we generally do follow the law, and halacha itself recognizes the law, and in many or most cases, the correct thing to do will to be a law-abiding citizen, one has to accept that as observant Jews, if the Torah and the law ever do come into irreconcilable conflict, the halacha will have to have the final say. The same as we all understand that if the law required someone to mechal Shabbos or eat chazer, we simply could not do it because we have a higher law, the law of the Torah. If there should ever be a case where the halacha refuses to recognize the law and refuses to allow a Jew to do what the law permits him or demands him to do, ultimately, one will have to follow the halacha. There may not be so many cases like that, and Mesira in general is an extremely complex and delicate topic, and most cases will have to involve a Sheilas Chacham. In this discussion, we will try to discuss some of the basic principles and quote a number of important precedents and discussions of the earlier Poskim, Rishonim, and Achronim, to give some kind of picture, some flavor of what sorts of cooperation with the government, particularly the criminal justice system, what sorts of cooperation the Torah forbids, what sorts it's neutral toward, and what sorts are actually sanctioned. So much of the discussion begins with a fascinating Gemara in Bava Metzia. It's actually an Agadah Gemara, and of course, it's always tricky to try to derive halacha from Agadah. Nevertheless, the poskim do derive important principles in halacha from this Gemara. So we will discuss the Gemara and discuss some of the lessons learned from it by the Rishonim and Achronim. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, a Tana, was once discussing detective work with a non-Jewish government official, a Farhanga. So the Gemara says that Ashkechalahu Farhaguna, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon met a Farhaguna, a government official, the Katavas Ganvi. He was catching Ganavim. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon raised an objection to him. He said, "How can you be so sure you're getting the right guys? Maybe you'll be arresting innocent men." So the guy agreed, and he said, "You're right. It's my method is not foolproof. What do you recommend?" So Amar Tag Marcha Hechi Tavid. I'll show you what to do. And he gave a fascinating suggestion, reminiscent of Sherlock Holmes' Holmesian deductions. He says, "Go into the restaurants or bars." And look for people, the kashasi chamra, the kanakit kasa biyadav kamenamnin, people who are holding glasses of drink and are falling asleep. So he says, if they're talmidei chachamim, they probably got up early to learn. If they're laborers, they also got up early to learn. But if they don't have one of these excuses, then probably he's a ganav who was up all night plotting and housebreaking and doing other nefarious activity. So the government heard about this and thought this was such a great idea, then they said, kraina di garta, iu lehavi parvanka. This was your idea. You're hired. So, as you Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, the Katafas Ganvi. They hired him as a detective, and he began to catch Ganavim. Shalach Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha was very unhappy with this course of conduct. He called him Chometz ben Yayin, vinegar son of wine. Ad Masai Atamoser Amashal Kenel Hariga. Apparently, he was catching Jewish Ganavim, and they were being executed. So, how can you do this? Shalach Lei, Kotzmini Machalim and Akarim. These people deserve it. They're Risham. Let God take care of his kotzim. You shouldn't be helping the government execute Jewish thieves. So this was their disagreement, and the Gemara goes on like this, and the Gemara is not entirely clear who was correct. The bottom of that, this is after Gimel Amud Beis and Bava Metzia. The bottom of the Amud, the Gemara says, Afra Bishmal Rabbi Yossi, Matiki Hamaisa Liyade. Bishmal Bar Yossi was also involved in this sort of gun of catching for the government, and he also there was an objection raised against what he was doing. In his case, the objection was raised by Elio himself. Pogabe Elio, Amar Lead, Masiatamos, Amashal Kenel Hariga. The same objection raised against Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon by Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. So he answered, Amar Lei, Mayavit, Hormna Demalkahu. This is my job from the government. What else should I do? Amar Lei, not an excuse. Avicharak Laasya, Atarak Ludkaya. Run, leave. You can't just resign, they don't let you. So just leave the country. There's no choice. So these are the two Gemaras. In both cases, we find one Tana was engaged in detective work for the government that resulted in Jewish criminals being killed. And objections were raised by Rabbi Shulman Karach and Elio that this is not appropriate. So as we said, this is an Agadah Gemara, and it's not clearly expressed in terms of Isser V'Hetter, and there's certainly nothing like a Psak in the Gemara. We do find several Rishonim who understand that Mikra Din, this is Mutter. The Ritva, in his Chidushim to Bava Metzia, and the Rashba in several Tshuvas, both of them say that even though there was a clear lack of due process here, there was no evidence, and there was certainly nothing that would allow a Beis Nishal Yisrael to convict criminals, nevertheless, this was okay. And there was also a cruel and unusual punishment. Ganavim, according to the Torah, are not supposed to get killed. Nevertheless, they say this was fine. And they explain that the government has the right and the duty to execute criminals, Melech Mishpat Yamad Aretz, without the government punishing and acting without two Edim. He said two Edim is very nice, but if we never punish criminals without having two Edim, criminals will always get away with it. And they bring the Gemara in Makos that says that Rabbi Kiva said that I would never kill criminals, I would always find loopholes. Achas L'Shevashana, Achas L'Shivashana, we wouldn't execute, various Tanaim said. And then, but the response was, Atamar B'Shovchei Dam B'Yisrael. If you refuse to ever execute criminals, then murderers will proliferate. So they say that it's the government's job to execute, and even without what halacha would consider proper due process. And the Rashba actually says, he brings the Gemara in Gittin, Lo Charva Yerushalayim El She'el HaShem, Midu Dinei Maldin Torah. We usually understand that to mean that it's a mitzvah to act with the Mishur HaSadin. The Rashba understands that to mean also that we can't always have the full due process required by halacha. It's the melech, the government's job, to punish criminals even when there isn't 100% foolproof evidence. So the Ritva is in his Chedushim, the Rashba is in several tshuvas, in Chelek Gimel, Simon Shin Sadi Gimel, in Chelek Hay, Simon Reish Lamed Ches. And the most fascinating, the most expansive tshuva is in the recently published Tshuvas Miksev Yad in Simon Shin Mem Hay. This one is actually brought by the Beis Yosef in Chesh Mishpat in the end of Shin Pei Ches. But then there was some censorship in the old Torahs, but the Rashba is published by Richas. But the Rashba makes this point that it's the government's job to execute criminals even without full due process, without evidence. And he brings a raya from Elazar ben Shimon. He says that you see that when a person has Hermana de Malka, when he has the government backing and he's appointed by the government to catch criminals, this is appropriate. And even though we find that Eliyahu and Rabbi Shimon and Karcha both objected, their objection was that it's a dirty business and Hasidim and Gedolim shouldn't get involved in it. But Mikra Din, there's no question that it's mutter. He says, Chametz Ben Yayin doesn't mean you're a Rasha. Chazal knew how to say Rasha. When they meant to say Rasha, they said Rasha. Chametz Ben Yayin means you're not on the same madrega as your father, who was a greater Chassid. And that's why he said, Ma'ayavad Hormon Demalka. Now, if he was considered a murderer and a Moser, Ma'ayavad is not an excuse. Yari Val Yavar, you have to die rather than kill innocent Jewish people. Teretz says it was not Aser, it was Mutter. And that's why he was saying, I have no choice, so I do it, even though I have to hold my nose and do it. He told, and Eliyahu still said, don't do it, go La Asya. He said, because for you, for a chassid, for a gadol hadar, for a tzaddik, you shouldn't be getting your hands dirty with this. But mi'ikar adin, it is mutter, the Rashba says. And this has generally been the accepted view among the poskim. The Beis Yosef brings this Rashba without bringing a dissenting view. And this has generally been what the Achronim have accepted, as I understand it, that it is permitted, certainly for ordinary people, if not for gadol hadar, to cooperate with the government, even if it will involve the execution of a Jewish criminal, even if al pi halacha we would have no right to kill him. The classic example of this is a fascinating tshuva in the Maram Shek, in Chosh Mishpat Simon Nun. There was a woman whose husband had mysteriously died, and they believed for various reasons that she had murdered her husband because she was having an affair. And they wanted to know if they should encourage the government to launch a criminal investigation, which would involve probably in her execution eventually, if they could catch her and find enough evidence against her. So he goes through this whole sugya of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and the ganav, the detective work, and he basically says, as we said, he says this is mutter. You see the Rashba, you see the Ritva, that basically this is okay. And he says, however, he tells the Rav who asked him the Shaila, we see that Gedolei Hadar should not get involved in this, so you should be Moshech Yadcha and you shouldn't get involved. But if regular people, if the Hamonam, if the ordinary citizens wish to encourage the government to investigate and punish, that's fine. Mikra Din is Mutter. Even though he says there may be a dissenting view, a different shot on the Sugya, or we pass Ganalik or Blasberg Shimon, he says, but Lahalacha, he says, Beis Yosef brings the Rashba, and Lahalacha, it is permitted for ordinary Jews to cooperate with the government. Even if this will result in the execution of a Jewish criminal who, after all, he says, deserves it. As we've said, there are dissenting views. Rabbi Broid in his classic paper on Masira mentions this. Rabbi Bleich has an article where he discusses alternative views. And people sometimes point out that the Maram Shik's own Rebbe Muvhak, the Chasam Sofer, possibly seems to have taken a different view of the matter. Chasam Sofer has a tshuva in the Likutim in Simon Yudalad. He's talking in general about Shochad, about bribing government officials. So basically he says that you should not be bribing officials if what they are doing, if they're acting properly, if they're acting in accordance with the law, he says. However, he says there are certain cases where they are acting incorrectly, where they're acting shelo kedin. One of the examples he gives is if they have paskin capital punishment on a Jew. He says, B'Yisrael hayotzi liharig b'dineihem, if a Yisrael is being executed according to their laws, devadei ein shum ofen shebaolam, there is no way in the world sheyischayev Yisrael hariga b'dineihem, for a Jew to be liable for the death penalty according to their laws, bli eidim v'asra, ubeis inshal Yisrael. A Jew can only be killed with eidim, with asra, with full due process, ubeis inshal Yisrael, only after a ruling issued by a beis inshal Yisrael, mumchim shel chav gimel, v'im kein kol harigasim hu shelo kimidin tara, Any execution of a Jewish criminal by a non-Jewish court is against din Torah. Umutar likin shochad lahatzel nafsho. So this Chum Sofer was talked about during the Grossman affair when the Florida court convicted him and sentenced him to death. It was talked of this Chum Sofer, and it is indeed hard to understand how this squares with the Maram Sheikh, his Talmud, who seems to have no problem with a non-Jewish court executing a Jewish criminal. Chum Sofer here says it's automatically against din Torah. Nevertheless, the Chum Sofer doesn't explicitly discuss the Gemara of Elazar ben Shimon, and as I said, I believe that the normative approach is to accept the Gemara of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Rav Moshe, in the Igros Moshe, in Chelek Hei, Simon Tes, Os Yud Aleph, he talks about turning over a thief, someone who had stole Sefer Torah and silver from a shul, to the government, and he rules unequivocally that he may not be turned over to the government, because government punishment for thieves, years in jail, is much more severe corporal punishment as opposed to mere restitution that halacha requires, much more severe than din Torah, and therefore he rules that it is absolutely prohibited to turn over a thief to the government. At the end of his tshuva, he mentions the Gemara of Elazar ben Shimon, and he seems to accept that it's l'halacha, but he says it's only a heter for people who actually work for the government, but not for ordinary civilians to volunteer information and to file claims against criminals. But even he seems to accept that the basic idea that one may work for the government, even if this will involve punishing Jewish criminals, even in ways that are beyond din Torah, is acceptable. And this brings us to another topic discussed by several contemporary poskim. Is a Jew permitted to work as an auditor or various kinds of investigators for the government, which will eventually involve flagging misconduct, even criminal misconduct by Jews, and sometimes resulting in their punishment? So Rav Moshe himself has another tshuva where he says it is actually mutter. In Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Aleph, Siman Tzadi Beis, he says it is mutter to be an auditor for the government. But his argument is technical. He doesn't involve Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. His argument is that the Gemara says that there is no din mesira if the enemies already have access to the Jews' money, and they just want you to make it more convenient for them to get it, but they can get it without you, there's no din mesira. So Ramosha assumes that even if this particular auditor doesn't take the job, the file will simply go to another auditor who will anyway get him. So Ramosha does say that it still will be asur l'chatchila, he says. However, he says, since when you take the job, you have the right to assume that most returns will be good, and once you have the job, you won't be able to, you'll have no choice, because if you don't take this file, you'll get fired. And anyway, he says it'll go to somebody else, and then someone else will find it. So basically, Ramosha allows it based on these technical arguments, but fundamentally based on the fact that once the government decides to audit him, if it isn't you, it'll be somebody else, and you're not really contributing materially to his getting caught. Rav Menashe Klein, on the other hand, takes a very different view. Rav Menashe Klein is in his Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Vav, Siman Shin Yud Gimel. He says that being an accountant is a very bad profession for a Jewish boy. He says he talks about it in his Shiurim often. He says, because accountants engage in a great deal of fraud. Even though he says it is true that sometimes accountants can engage in finding perfectly legitimate loopholes, and he gives various examples, he says nothing wrong, he says, with taking advantage of clever, ingenious loopholes in the tax code. However, he says, very often accountants are asked to do things that are flat-out fraud, and that is absolutely usur, and the accountant cannot do that. Also, he says, being an auditor for the government, he says, if he says you want to be an auditor for the government, that will involve Masiri, he says, very often. He says you'll be getting Jews in trouble. And he actually mentions the sorts of arguments suggested by Rav Moshe to permit it, arguing that if it isn't you, it'll be somebody else, and if it isn't... But he says that doesn't hold water, he says. Ein l'hisakesh v'lomar, that since the government will go over the file anyway, if it won't be you, it'll be somebody else, he says. Absolutely not true, he says. Zayin o'klum. He doesn't mention Rav Moshe, but he says that's not... That argument, he says, is utterly unpersuasive. He says, chada, mi yomar shasheni yezar es kamo. Maybe you're better. The Yavin Shimus Medina, Shemalo Yezar is Vlayim Saru. Accounting is not a purely mechanical, I'm not an accountant, but I'm assuming, and he assumes that accounting is not purely mechanical. There is some skill, and there is some perceptiveness required. Shane is Shemalo Yechastik Shalot. He assumes the accountant, the auditor, will have some choice over which files to audit. Who said the other accountant will have the same choice? Will make the same choice. So he doesn't, he thinks that being an auditor for the government is actually usur. He does not buy Ramosha's arguments. And he says that he winds up, his psak is, he said, anyway, you shouldn't be the one to bring about catastrophe for a Jew. He said, you should not work for the government in this capacity. If you have the choice, and if you have the choice not to inspect Jewish files, that's fine. But otherwise, he's very worried about the fact that you'll be getting Jews in trouble. Rav Vosner in the Shevet Halevi Chelik Bey Simon and Ches, he actually is okay with accounting, and he invokes the Gemara of Rabbi Shimon. He says, you see from the Gemara, and he brings the Rishonim that it is mutter. And even if it's Chassidim and Gedolei Torah shouldn't be involved, a Mikra Din, it is permitted for a Jewish accountant to audit Jewish files, and even if he gets him in trouble, that is okay. And one of the sources he brings, in addition to the Gemara and the Rashba and that we've seen, he brings the Ber Hagola and Simon Shin Peches and Sif Yud Beis, who says that the custom was that they reported Jews to the government when they were trying to cheat, and then we don't let them cheat, and this is terrible. They stand vigilant, that nobody should do fraud that nobody should engage in fraud or deception against the nations. They announce and they permit people that they should expose people who are cheating, who are planning on defaulting. Expose them to the non-Jews. Call me das manhigim. This is all with the permission and sanction of the manhigim. So unlike Rav Moshe, who permits it only on technical grounds, and Rav Moshe's arguments, as we've seen, are debatable. As Rav Moshe Klein says, Rav Vosner says this is mutter simply based on the Gemara of Elazar ben Shimon, that it is permitted to cooperate with the government on matters of criminal justice. Minchas Yitzchak also has a tshuva discussing being an accountant. He was asked by an accountant in Tangiers, Morocco. His tshuva is actually different because he was asked by an accountant who was being appointed by the court to be a court-appointed expert to help in civil cases. It seems that they were not actually criminal cases that the government or the IRS was prosecuting. These were civil cases between two plaintiffs, two non-Jews, a non-Jew and a Jew, two Jews. He discusses the various possibilities. And he was simply going to be consulted as an expert to help decide who was right, but there were no criminal cases. But nevertheless, he still seems to think that this is a bad idea. Certainly, if there's a Jew and a non-Jew, he says, if you may wind up getting the Jew in trouble getting the Jew in trouble in favor of the non-Jew, and he also has the problem of our cause. He says, since these are civil cases filed by Jews, then even if you're not even if you're not filing yourself, it's a problem of Sela Dov Ravera. And he actually also is against doing this kind of thing, also because of the Masira or Arkaz issues, although he doesn't get into much detail, and he certainly does not mention the Gemara of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Moving now to a related topic, a number of poskim discuss the question of cooperating with the government specifically on murder investigations, sometimes with the murderers of Jews, sometimes where the murderer was a non-Jew, sometimes the murderer was a Jew. And they actually advance a number of quite interesting reasons why we would tend to allow or even encourage such cooperation. There is a tshuva of the Tzemach Tzedek, the early one from Nicholsburg, in Simon Kuf Yud Aleph, brought by the Piskei Tshuva at the very end of Chosh Mishpat and Tav Chavav. He was asked about a case where a non-Jew had murdered a Jew, and the Jewish relatives, the Jewish community, could press the government to investigate and punish the murderer, but it would cost money. It wasn't an easy thing to do. They asked him, should they, must they press the claim? And he says, absolutely. It is very important to. And he gives two reasons to. The first reason, he says, is Goel Hadam. There is a mitzvah, what they call blood feuds. There is a mitzvah of the krovim of a murder victim avenging the murder victim. And it's a mitzvah, he says, and what is considered a karov? There's no share, he says. Anyone who is karov min ha'av and roi lirash, they share the same father or male ancestor, and they therefore inherit from each other, has the mitzvah of Goel Hadam. And he says, therefore, they're actually mechuyev to spend money to avenge the death of their relative. He does say, however, that this is only what are considered normal fixed amounts that you have to pay to the courts and the government officials. It does not include other unlimited expenses to melitzim, and not clear what they are. But the reason he gives is a technical one, he says, because we find that even with regard to kvura, Chazal didn't want to lay too heavy a burden on the relatives because they were afraid they would simply that the relatives would simply throw their hands up in the air and leave and abandon the mace. So we don't want to burden the relatives with such a high obligation. So we cap the amount that they are mechuyev to a standard normal amount. However, he says the community should spend more money if necessary. Why? Because even though they may not have the mitzvah of Goel Hadam, here he has a second reason. He says it is very important, and he reiterates it several times, it is very important that the non-Jews not get the impression that Jewish blood is hefker. Shlo yi adam shel bnei bris hefker chas v'shalom. Because if they think that we just turned the other cheek, he says, if they think that they can just murder us with impunity and we do nothing, they'll do it again. So he says, and many times he says, we've done this in the community. We've spent money to press charges against murders. Even if we knew we weren't going to win at the end, we knew that ultimately we were going to fail. He says, because it is important. He says, it is crucial that our enemies not think that they can murder Jews and get away with it. So the second reason is voiced by a number of other poskim. There is an earlier tshuva of the Maram Lublin in the 16th century. He was asked about a case where the government had arrested a Jewish criminal. He was a pretty worthless fellow. They couldn't find any redeeming. He had murdered one or more people. He was a scoundrel in general with apparently no redeeming virtues. And the question was, should they attempt to get him out? Should they attempt to, should they kill him themselves? Should they encourage the government to kill him? So he has a long tshuva mostly discussing the question of Makin Va'unshin Shalom and Adin, of Beis Din and the community's extrajudicial powers to maintain order and prevent Avera. At the end of the tshuva, he says that this would apply. And he says, and additional factors, he says, first of all, it would be a terrible chil Hashem, he says, if the non-Jews have him arrested on murder, and we just say, oh, we don't care, let him go, do whatever you want with him, he says, that would be a terrible chil Hashem. This is something worthy of remembering by our community sometimes when we have campaigns for murders. This is an important cheshbon, though, that we should not make a chil Hashem by giving the impression that we don't care about murder. And also, he brings the cheshbon we saw on the Tzemach Tzedek. He says that our enemies must not get the impression that we don't care about our murder. This would be terrible if they began to think that we don't particularly care if our own co-religionists get murdered. So he says we shouldn't actually kill him ourselves. He says, however, if he's anyway in their custody and they're prepared to kill him, then yes, the Goel Hadam should encourage the government to press charges and to punish him as their laws demand. The Chavos Yair in his Tshuvos in Siman Kuf Mem Vav has a tshuva also about a Jewish murderer, who had been arrested by the government, not actually on a charge of murder. He had become a chavre ganavim and a baryoni. I mean, he had become a criminal element, and the government had arrested him on gneva. And in those days, they executed ganavim. And the question was, should they attempt to get him out of jail or not? So the Chavos Yair goes back and forth. He discusses the idea of Goel Hadam, and he actually argues that Goel Hadam does not apply b'zman hazeh. He argues that Goel Hadam, first of all, he says it's not even clear that it's l'chatchila. It may only be that b'di'evad he's not considered a rotzeach, even though the Gemara seems to have a tzad that it's a mitzvah. I'm not sure how he deals with that, but he says it's not clear b'chlal that Goel Hadam is a... that we actually recommend Goel Hadam l'chatchila to kill the murderer. And he says, anyway, he says you need due process. There have to have been edim and hasra, but there have to have been edim. Even Bizmana Sanhedrin, he says, it would have to be due process, and certainly Bizmana Zeh, with his no Sanhedrin, and Batlam, he says, based in, he's inclined to say that there is no din, Goel Hadam, Bizmana Zeh. Regarding however, he says, he is a murderer, and there is another argument, he says, for allowing the non-Jews to kill the murderer. He says, it is Yadua, and there is support from it in Chazal, that the soul of a murder victim does not rest until his murderer is brought to justice. We hear that very often in ghost stories, and apparently it was a common idea in the Chavos Yair's time too, and he says that this is a legitimate idea which has support in Chazal. So he says if he had been arrested for murder, he'd be inclined, at least he would have a good side, that we should let him be executed. But Lamaisi says he was executed for Gneva, and he goes back and forth on this, and he says, Ein biyadi l'hachriya. He says, you can't simply say Shev Al Tasa Adif because maybe we shouldn't turn him over, because since we've said that the murder victim himself has an interest in here, he says both sides have interests. he says it's not fair to the murder victim to let him get away if killing him would bring rest to his soul. So Ambiati Lahiri says it's a difficult question, he says, and he's not sure what we should do. The basic question of whether the mitzvah of Gaul Adam applies to Nanazeh is actually discussed by the Achronim and Chasam Mishpat and Siman Beis. The Urim V'Tumim takes essentially the same position as the Ksos, that without a Sanhedrin, we cannot have the din of Gaul Adam, so B'Zmanazeh, the Gaul Adam is obsolete. However, the Ksos says no. The Ksos says, since when do you need Sanhedrin for Gaul Adam? Gaul Adam is a private vigilante justice by the relatives of the murder victim, and they certainly may kill him B'Zmanazeh. However, the Ksos then backtracks and says that even if you don't need a Sanhedrin, you do need a Kabbalah Edus to know that he actually is the murderer. And B'Zmanazeh, we can't be Kabbalah Edus, he says. So he's not actually sure if, for technical reasons, we may be prevented from applying Gaul Adam. However, there are actually a number of early sources in Rishonim that Gaul Adam was actually practiced in the medieval period. The Marsham, in a note to the Ksos, mentions a Chuvas HaRush. The Rush talks about a case of Eliphaz, who was killed by Zimri. Presumably these are not actual names, he says. I would assume, but we use Reuven and Shimon for normal cases, we use Zimri and Eliphaz for murder. The problem was that the Edim for the murder, one of the Edim was a brother-in-law of the murder victim. He was the brother of the wife of the murder victim. Now, the woman herself had died. She had predeceased her husband. Her husband was a widower at the time of his death. But the Shoel to the Rush was wondering, maybe he's still possible for Edus, because he is a brother-in-law, even though the woman who connects them is dead. And also because he's the uncle of the Gaul Adam, of the murdered man's children. The Rush says, no, not a problem. He says, you worried about him being a brother-in-law of the murder victim? Well, since the woman was dead, the kurva has dissipated, then that's not a problem. You worried about him being an uncle of the Gaul Adam? Not a problem either, he says. As long as he's not a karov to the murder victim, we don't care if he's a relative of the Gaul Adam. This is the Rush in Klal Nun Zayin. So the Rush doesn't say exactly what the issue was. What were they going to do with this Edus? But nevertheless, Masham seems to be hinting that the Rush does seem to imply that there was some sort of Gaul Adam, some sort of idea of Gaul Adam still being practiced in his time. And there are also references in the Marivail and the Maram Mirzberg, 15th century, 15th, 16th century German poskim, who indicate that Gaul Adam was practiced in their time. In the Maram Mirzberg, he says, Din Gaul Adam Rudafu Ad Chova. There was a case where the Gaul Adam pursued the murderer until they caught him, Visigu, and they killed him, presumably. Kedin also Gaul Adam. They did properly, he says. Shenokmu Avihim. The Gavrik Tela Kotlu. They avenged their father. They killed a person who was Mechuyav Misa, a dead man walking, Bein Ladam, and there's no punishment. And he brings Raias to this, and he says, and even though they went outside the Tchum on Shabbos to avenge their father, Mashaholchu Michutz L'Tchum B'Shabbos Kedilinkum Avihim, he says, no, also not a problem. You're allowed to do Chil Shabbos, he says, for this. Ma'ar Tzicha She'av Malachai Tzedach HaShabbos, Kavachar Me'avodah, L'chaz V'la Sivaru, Kol Shkein Tchumen D'Rabbanan, Havik Ma'bikuach Nefesh Tzedach HaShabbos. So, very interesting, Maram Mirzberg, he says that it's like Pikuach Nefesh, which is Tzedach HaShabbos, Kol Shkein Tchumen D'Rabbanan, so he has no problem with the vigilante execution of the murderer, no problem with the Chil Shabbos, and he clearly says that Gaul Adam, he implies even L'chatchila, that was a perfectly fine thing to do. Similarly, in the Marivail says, "Harig nefesh ein legal hadam likach mamon minaratzeh v'limcholav." The Gaul Adam should not accept blood money from the murderer and let him go. This is Marivail Os Samachalef in the Din Bahalachas at the end of Marivail, and he brings a Rambam. He says, and it's important that the Gaul Adam should avenge him. And he says that that's. That's Gaul Adam, that they should not take money, and he also implies that the mitzvah of Gaul Adam still applies B'zman HaZeh. The other idea we mentioned of the Chavas Yar, that it's important to avenge a murder, because in order that the soul of the murder victim should rest, this is also mentioned in a Tshuva in the Divrei Malkiel, in Chelek Simon Samach. His case was a Jew had been found murdered, and they believe they knew who did it, a certain non-Jew. And the question, again, was filing a complaint with the government. And at this time, it wasn't the money that was the issue. The issue was that under the law, they knew that the opening of a murder investigation would trigger an autopsy. And Nivel HaMeis is a terrible thing. So one of the Divrei Malkiel's arguments for permitting it is the same thing that the Chavas Yar says. He says that We know in general the rule is that nivola la mace is permitted if it is ultimately in the mace's interest. And he said the mace would surely want his murderer caught because his soul can rest that way. It's important for him to have his murderer caught, and therefore nivola la mace is worth it in order to avenge the murder. And he also mentions the other argument that it's important that the non-Jews not get the impression that Jewish blood is hefker. And therefore, these are two arguments he advances in favor of opening the criminal investigation, even though it will result in nivola mes. Another interesting mention, this is not in a halachic context, but one last mention of this concern about shlo yudam shel bnei Yisrael hefker appears in the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh in the context of the story of the catastrophe at Shechem in Parshas Vayishlach. At the end of the story, Shimon and Levi have wiped out the city of Shechem, and Yaakov is worried about it. Yaakov says, "Vayomer Yaakov, Shimon veLevi, achartem osi, lavishenu biyoshev haaretz, bachnani vaprizi, v'nima se misbar, v'nestu alai, v'yikuni, v'nishmadeti ani uvesi." Yaakov said, "This is very dangerous. We're outnumbered, and they're going to destroy us." And Shimon and Levi retorted, "Vayom rachazona yasis achaseinu," that how shall we let them make a zone out of our sister? So a number of the Mefarshim shtel, what kind of answer was this? Yaakov said, "This is very dangerous," and they answered, "Takazoni yasis achaseinu," but it's still dangerous. So what was the answer? So we find a number of approaches in the Mefarshim. Abarbanel, being a 16th century Spanish nobleman, 15th century, says that their answer was yes. You know, it is dangerous, but it's better to die with honor than to live with disgrace. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, though, gives two other answers. One answer, he says, he understands that they weren't making an appeal to honor or anything like that. They were making a very cold, calculated argument. And he suggests two possibilities. The first one was, he says, that they were telling Yaakov, don't worry, the non-Jews are not going to feel the need to avenge what we did to Shechem, because they'll understand that what we did was justified. They'll say, well, they deserved it. It's kumtze, that they shouldn't have started up with, they shouldn't, so since they will understand that we were justified, they won't feel the need to attack us. The second shot, he says, however, is that Shimon and Levi's argument was, Yaakov, you're telling us that this is dangerous, that they're going to attack us. This is safety. This is safety, they said. As we've seen in the Tzemach Tzedek and in the other Achronim, If our enemies get the impression that they can insult us and assault us and we do nothing, that will result in the greatest danger for us, because they'll do it again and nothing will stop them. He says this way, if they know that what they do will result in immediate and bloody retaliation, they will think twice before they attack us. And indeed, that's what happened, that there was chitas elokim on the surrounding nations, and they did not attack the Bnei Yaakov. So in summary, we have seen at least four reasons offered by the Poskim in favor of cooperating with the criminal justice system in the punishment of murderers. First, there is a mitzvah of Goel Adam, of the relatives of a murdered man avenging his death. Second, the idea that the soul of the murder victim will not rest until his murderer is punished, which the Divrei Malkiel actually says is the rationale behind Goel Adam. Third, deterrence. We do not want our enemies to think that they can attack us with impunity. And fourth, the idea of Chilul Hashem, mentioned by Maram Lublin, that we do not want the non-Jews to think that we do not take murder and villainy seriously. Earlier in our lecture, we discussed the general question of cooperating with the criminal justice system, largely based on the Gemara of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, the idea that the government has the right to punish criminals and we have the right to cooperate with them. But here we see that with regard to murder in particular, there are several additional considerations. Even if, with regard to a Jewish murderer, the reason of Shelo Yehei Dam Shel Bnei Bris Hefker may not apply, the other reasons all do apply, that there is still a mitzvah of Goel Adam, and there still is an imperative to help the soul of the murder victim rest more easily, and there still can be a tremendous Chilul Hashem if we give the impression that we don't care about murder. I close by reiterating that obviously the issues we have been discussing are of the gravest severity, and when faced with such a situation, someone with a deep understanding of both the relevant halacha and realia must be consulted.